discussing many of these types of issues, and not just Shabbos, which Rabbi Kushner discussed so far, but many other issues. We've realized that the Baal HaNisayon, the person that's out there in the front lines of in business and trying to be erlich, trying to do follow the halacha and try to do what's right and advise other people, is the most useful tool that we can benefit from, is hearing from people themselves who are out there and having these nisayonis and advising others through their nisayonis and through the challenges in business as far as they come through in halacha. There have been many times that someone has approached me with a question and I've reached out to a professional in that field and asked, you know, how would you deal with this? And some of those people are here with us today in the crowd, and also have joined us to join a panel. Well, this is the first time we've done something like that, but we've asked some people in the field as lawyers, accountants, and to join us today to give us a little bit of a perspective from somebody that in themselves in the field and has advised other people throughout facing challenges and hear a little bit what we have to gain from that. So I really appreciate Mr. Eli Levy and Mr. Joe Sacker for joining us this morning, and hopefully we'll be able to hear from them and gain from what they have to say. So with that, I introduce Mr. Eli Levy for some introductory remarks.
Business people face in terms of doing business and doing it the right way is, for at least from my perspective, is knowing enough to ask the right questions. Most business people don't study Hashem Mishpat, they don't study business halacha, at least they don't do so regularly. And it's very hard if you don't study that stuff to really know how to flag issues and to see issues as they occur. And I know the rabbi spoke about this earlier before we started this, but it really is a prevalent challenge for business people. If you don't know enough to ask the question, chances are you're probably doing something wrong. And I've seen this time and time again. But the good thing is that we live in a place where we have access to rabbis who can answer the questions or get answers to our questions. We just have to be smart enough or know enough to be able to ask the right questions. I'll just give you one example. I have a client who does real estate deals, and what they do is they borrow money from their mother's line of credit. So he comes to me, wants to do the deal, funds the deal from money from his mother's line of credit. He pays his mother's line of credit back. He pays the interest on his mother's line of credit. He's been doing it for 10 years. The Shomer Shabbos Jew, good person. I told him, I think you have a problem. He says, what kind of problem do I have? I said, I think you have a problem with ribbis. He said, what are you talking about? It's my mother. Okay. I don't know that means it's not ribbis. What do you mean I pay it back? Okay. I pay the interest. Yes, exactly. You pay the interest. That's why it's a problem. So he went and he asked about it. And he found out that for 10 years, every month, every 2 months, he's literally engaging in the practice of paying ribbis, probably ribbis from the Torah, big problem. Not so simple. So
he's borrowing from her. Or he's borrowing from the bank?
He's borrowing from her line
She's
of credit.
Borrowing from the bank.
She's borrowing from the bank.
So he took out from her line of credit.
Logic would dictate that.
Right. So it seems like
why not?
No. Even that logic. It's actually wrong. He's not borrowing from the bank. The bank doesn't know who he is.
Right.
It's not a logic. It's just wrong.
Want to explain the issue?
But then he's not paying interest to his mother.
He is. Well, he can't be paying to the bank. He doesn't have a relationship with the bank.
When interest payments are getting paid,
it really
from the bank account.
Right. It would be looked at halachically for sure, but I think even not halachically. I mean, not halachically. In the mitzias, there's two transactions because the bank doesn't know he exists.
Right,
the bank's lending money to the mother. The mother's passing on the loan with the same terms because the mother's not profiting off her son. Or maybe she is. I don't know. So there's two transactions. And then instead of just afuchim atrasa, which is a term to mean, why go through a whole merry-go-round of pay the mother and then the mother pays the bank? So as a convenience, he's paying the bank. But there are two legitimate loans. that's legally la halacha, and that's the metzias. So then what we have is we have interest. Now, if he never officially stipulated with his mother that he's taking achrayus, which means he's obligating himself to pay the interest, so then maybe it won't be a deraisa. He wasn't ever kaitzitz. He never said, I'm paying the interest. He didn't let the mother pay the interest. I never said, even though maybe it's unspoken. So then maybe it's only going to be ribbis derabon. And ribbis derabon is still very chama, right? Ribbis is the only thing the Gemara brings. It's learned that. Tosfos over there, the ribbis is from the only thing that the Malvi ribbis do not come back in the days of Mashiach. That Tosfos brings. He says that Malvi Ribbis, there's a pasuk, I'm not as familiar in Nach as I should, but there is a pasuk that after Mashiach, there's no more time. It's just Shemesh, it just goes. And Malvi Ribbis, the way people collect Ribbis, the way they work is they collect it by the day. It's very important people learn Ribbis to have a night, because that's the units of time that measures their Ribbis. So it comes out, he says, is that people that lend ribbis are not mitzapel Yeshua. They don't want Mashiach. The whole business goes bankrupt. They're lending money with an interest rate after a year, and the day never stops, and they never get paid their interest. So that's what he says. But the point is that even with the Rabbanan Pashtas, people that are marveled ribbis, that's extremely frightening. Not much frightening. I am a little surprised that people don't know about that, I'll be honest. You just taught me something. That I thought people do know. I thought people know that you're taking out someone's credit card or taking out someone's interest loan or someone's mortgage, and you're not on the mortgage, then by definition, I mean, it's just logic. But logic dictates, is that what you said? Logic indeed dictates is that you're borrowing money from a yid and it's ribbis. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. This was a sophisticated person, business person that was doing this transaction. So this is good. It highlights the example that we need to, you know, chances are anytime you have an issue or a business dealing with a payment going from one party to another party with any sort of bells and whistles connected to that payment, it's always safer just to ask. Just like you would have your lawyer review your contract and say, yeah, it's a good contract, you're protected. You should also have a rabbi review the business arrangement to make sure you're protected spiritually. So ribbis is one of those things that I think we should have a conference just on ribbis. Because there's so many things that could go wrong in business transactions. The safest way is the easiest way is just to call Rabbi Blezer. And he's available. I call Rabbi Blezer at any time, 11, 12 o'clock at night. He answers my calls. I think he'll answer your calls too. So by all means, use the rabbis as a resource. And he has reviewed, Rabbi Blezer has reviewed terms of transactions and said, this is good, this is not good. You can't do it this way, do it that way. Little seemingly insignificant differences make a huge difference in the world of ribbis. So I guess there we would always want to ask and get things pre-approved. And you can't just be your own posek either. When it comes to money, you stand to gain from it. So if you're your own posek and you stand to gain, chances are you're not going to give yourself a fair psak. So you'll just ask someone else to give you the psak instead of you making your own psak. We tend to want to be our own posek when it comes to us benefiting financially from the arrangement. The other things that come up are partnerships. Yidden love to become partners with one another. When you become a partner with one another, you need to think about a few things in advance so that your partnership starts on a good note and ends on a good note. Partnerships do end. They're not forever. They don't last forever. So you probably want to have some sort of an agreement between you and your partner. That agreement probably wants to have a neutral third-party mediator who can mediate your disputes, someone that both parties trust. And you do want to have a provision in there saying that in the event of a disagreement between the parties, you want to agree and select a Beis Din that you all agree to go to. That will save you months of time and haggling about which Beis Din in which city. All those things take a lot of time and result in uncertainties for business people. You want to know that if you have a dispute with your partner in the future, even though you're in love right now, in 10 years from now, if something changes in your circumstance, you want to know who you're going to mediate the dispute. You want to know which Beis Din you're going to, in which city, who's going to pick the Dayanim, how that all works. That could all be hashed out in a simple agreement. It's done in advance. You could call Beis Avad, you could call Rabbi Blezer. They could give you a form that you can use, a language that you can incorporate into your agreement. And you could avoid all sorts of headaches. It's a very simple way of just avoiding headaches down the line.
If you could put that into the contract ahead of time, would that be binding in the secular law? Like
What was the question? What was the question?
If that's in your contract, then would that even be binding a secular law that because the two parties agreed that they can then have to go to the basin?
It's not binding to say that you're going to go to an arbitration. If you go to the arbitrator, it happens like this. You really touched on it. I don't know if you, hopefully you haven't been in a lot of Bati Dinim, and hopefully you haven't been in a lot of Machleksin, but it's really, it's really, I'm just going to echo this. When the partnerships start, they usually start with a lot of goodwill because they're optimistic. If you just put in a line in your contract and it says that we agree and in a disagreement with both, both would make a sure that it's not possible to submit because we're about to make so much money, it's not even a game. He wants to take it, I don't care, right? So yeah, we're going to whatever it is, Bezmi Sharm, let's say it's like nobody will bat an eyelash. And Lemaisa, once the disagreement starts, the heartache you will save yourself, because ultimately, once that goodwill falls apart and then they do have a machlekes, what happens is it is the biggest problem is which person to go. Once you go to Bezin, things can start going hopefully a little more smooth. But that is the biggest problem, because he starts getting, especially if he knows he's not he might be on shaky ground. So then he starts angling, and then he finds out which Bati Dinim are more kal for him, and then he's not going to that Bezin, and then that Bezin's chutzal ear, and then the question is, he Masar Avodin, and now he says, okay, so if you don't go to my Bezin, I'm going to our Akkoyz. And the whole thing just blows up. And one little line that we agree to go to this bed. And now I'm assuming what you said, a mediator. The halacha of going to court is the same halacha. You can't just go to a mediator. You have to go to bed. The Torah says Eila Mashpatim Mashatosim Lifneim Veloy Lifneakum. You can't go to a goyim Lifneim Veloy Lehadyotes. You're really not allowed to go to Hedyotis. Hedyotis are people that are just being paid to mediate. I'm assuming when you say mediating, you mean Bezdin. Rabbinical mediator. Because there is something called mediators. There is a whole Shilif, there's a town, and there is no Bezdin. And instead of going to Arkoyas, can they hire like a mediator? And it's a whole different discussion where the mediator would just be Hedyotis, and the Omakabal, that they're going to agree to this businessman who's going to. And that's very, very complicated if you're allowed to do that. But Nikra didn't have to go to a Bezdin, and you couldn't be more right. If you just that one line, no one will ever have a problem. Whatever Bezdin you're right. If you're dealing with someone who's Ashkenaz and he's Sephardi and you're at an Ashkenaz Bezdin, the guy won't have a problem. And if the Sephardi is smart enough to do it and he writes a Sephardi Bezdin, and it's big enough community between Ashkenaz and Sephardi, and it could be the difference in who wins, 100% the difference in who wins, right? Then, right? If you go, okay, we're not going to go into all the cases, but in any case, there's so much goodwill in the beginning of a partnership. People are just, that's the way they are. They're optimistic. But every you write, the guy won't even bat an eyelash. He'll sign it, and then you just save yourself so much hardship down the road.
Rabbi Friedman's coming, so we have a Bezdin here. Also, just specifically, more specifically, it is enforceable in a secular court. Florida law will respect an agreement between two people that was entered into voluntarily to cede jurisdiction to a third party Bezdin, which they'll consider an arbitration panel. And then whatever results, when you go to Bezdin, they'll make you sign that you're acknowledging that they are a valid arbitration panel. And whatever decision is rendered by the Bezdin, you could enforce in a secular court as a final judgment. You could convert the arbitration award, the Bezdin award, into a final judgment. And then to the extent you need to use the secular courts to enforce, because the Bezdin today doesn't have the power, unfortunately, to enforce the judgment, you could probably use the secular courts to enforce the Bezdin's award. Must sign, yes, they must sign it. You can't go to.
They don't agree to the psak. They sign the court to arbitration.
They're agreeing that the Bezdin has the jurisdiction to adjudicate and enter a ruling. Yeah. Unless you sign that, the Bezdin won't even start.
Right. If you go to Bezdin and you won't sign that, usually they'll just call you a Masar Abuddin and they'll sign the Tarakoyz. You're wasting your time.
Could it be stated in the contract what the composition of the Bezdin should be, that they should be, just fully defined?
But if it's a Bezdin Kavua,
that they should be Shomer Shabbat, Shomer Mitzvah.
You should name it as close as you can to
the actual Beis Din, even including this Beis Din, and say and name the Beis Din you want to go
sure.
to. The more definite, the more information you put, the better it's going to be, right? Unless at least it, it's a
yeah.
chance of a problem.
If Reuven does business with Shimon, right? And if there's a dispute, you're going to end up in a Jewish court in a Beis Din. So why aren't the documents? Why aren't you encouraged that the documents that are governing that relationship between the two parties should be written by Dayanim anyways? Because at the end of the day, your whole secular, you know, document is it governs a little bit with the Dayanim see, but at the end of the day, they're really looking at, you know, what they how they interpret the relationship. So why aren't people doing?
Good, you are Rabbanim that do get involved in helping you define what the relationship should be. Ultimately, if you're familiar with business, ultimately, it's statistically and mathematically, it's impossible in a contract to define everything that will go on, and to because of that, preclude that there'll never be arguments. There will be arguments that will not be laid out in a contract. It's just too many directions the business goes during the lifetime of a business. Now, you could try to define what you can, but the contract will go to 300 pages, and it'll be look like the Library of Congress, and it will not solve the problems because things come up that are definable and are malleable and that can be interpreted. And still, you can't eradicate machlekes through a contract, though you could try. Well, I mean, it seriously, you could try, and it helps if you define. You think of the most basic cases and you speak it out. And
well, I think what he's asking is
you should
define it in
yeah,
terms
so.
That hold up in Beis Din as opposed to terms that hold
right.
up in court.
So
every person is putting terms into the agreement, that's good for their side, obviously. So
it will hold up. It will hold up. Chashim Mishpat is very malleable. We can make agreements on anything we want. On anything we want. We could decide what we want. I mean, obviously, you can't do ribbis. I mean, me and you can't agree to go to our kois. But those are not monetary things. Me and you could structure our business how we wanted to structure it. We don't have to have...
I'm asking, what would you encourage? Go the route of having a die and paying $5,000,
$10,000? $5,000,
$10,000,
no. If he's charging $5,000, $10,000, it's probably a crook. No, I really mean it. To look at a contract?
No, to write the contract.
No, to write the contract.
I think it takes a step back.
As Eli was talking about how we have to, as business people, we need to be aware, as you were mentioning, we need to be aware, understand some of the issues that happen, because if then we can ask the question, right? We're smart enough to ask the question. But let me take a flip side a little bit. So since you brought that up, I'm to the other side. You have a lot of people here look like advisors too. I see other accountants and lawyers and stuff here as well. So there's a reliance all of a sudden. So I'm an accountant. From accountant, I must know what all those points are. I must know it, right? This is from God. He clearly knows all the different things. So when he does the contract, he's going to make sure that it's done the right way. It doesn't always work that way. So now taking a step back. So as the advisors now, you have to sit there. You don't know all the answers. Clearly, we don't. You have to be able to say, listen. We need to be smart enough to say, hey, did you think about this? Did you think about that? And bring that up. And maybe that's the point where we need to say, hey, Isaac, you know what? If Shimon and Reuven are going to do a deal together, we say, and if I'm representing one of them, hey, you know, we probably should have a dial and look at this right now so we can avoid the problem later. Okay. But that's why it doesn't happen. Because a lot of times the business people already have the assumption, right? Because clearly, if the dial should have looked at it as the advisor, I should have told you. Don should be looking at it. Okay? Because it gives me a chance. So I think it's a significant expectation. That's why as advisors, we need to also be as knowledgeable as we possibly can to bring awareness and say that. So just to add to just a couple of the opening points that you had mentioned, just things to think about. It's interesting. I see this a lot when I get involved, I get called into a situation. Let's say, you know, so accounting, taxes, you have to restructure something. Whenever you restructure something, it's so much more complicated than structuring right the first time. Besides the fact it costs much more money, is all of a sudden you have to unwind, redo, and all these different things. So it's a major lesson to where you got to do it upfront at the beginning. Okay, no matter whatever it is, if someone's going to look at something, if you need someone, think about it at the beginning. It's worthwhile to spend the time because you're going to save so much time and money later if you're going to wait until afterward there's a problem. And how things just come up, again, this is not something you could maybe would have thought about, but you have brought up partnership. Things that happen over the course of time, I'm still actually involved in a situation to where I'm involved in a partnership where you have three individuals that bought real estate together. And they financed from a bank, right? They financed. And then over the course of after four or five years with the rates and this and that, one of the partners decide, you know what, I'm going to refinance the loan because I have a mortgage in my house. It's much cheaper, better than going. It's underwater a little bit, so I'm not going to get favorable appraisal. The partnership wasn't get favorable appraisal. So then, you know what? Let me go ahead and refinance it itself. And then the partnership will pay the partner back. Similar idea that you just brought up with the Rivets. So now it goes by. Nothing. No payments were made. And now 2-3 years later, and I'm confronted with the situation. I'm like, okay, I don't know what really to do here. I call my Rav because they're like, well, what should we do? And my Rav's like, well, this is very complicated. Because now you're in the middle of something. I don't know. Do we have to liquidate? Do we have to do this? How to handle it? Because you can't do a heter isker right now because it's kind of too late for that. Okay. Even though the payments were made, okay, the payments were being accruing, but not made. So it's significantly complicated to come into a situation in the middle and try to unwind it, right? Or try to figure out how to make it work. So if there's another takeaway of today, is you really want to try to think through, and definitely if you're doing business of the year, you want to make sure, obviously, that someone does look at it, who has an understanding, you ask a question, hey, am I okay? But at the same time, maybe looking and look at the documents, as you mentioned, but at the same time, you got to think through as you're in the lifeblood of a deal, as things come up, you got to ask the question, because you know how complicated it is, and again, if you wait until afterwards, sometimes it doesn't get resolved, it doesn't get resolved by favorably because someone knows how to resolve it.
Does that have to do with you doing business only with people who are your shemayim? Let's say you're going to be going into business who are, you're going to do this partnership, you're going to have a whole board together that are not either religious or care about the values that are dear to you, to your olam haba. Is that going to make a difference if you can enter into these partnerships with people?
It's a good question. I mean, that's, you have to
I'm
ask.
I'm deferring that to you.
Yeah.
I can defer to Moshe. Moshe has a whole truth, man. He says this, I'm just going to quote, he says that a person should do whatever he can to avoid entering into a partnership with the knowledge, which is true. And he says, he happens to say it's a chil Hashem. He says he believes it's a chil Hashem because a partnership is a certain relationship where he doesn't think a from Yid should have a partnership, a frayid, but that's from a Hashkafic angle, but from a halachi, he says it's a walking landmine. It really is. The Negev Shabbos, it never ends. And people sometimes call on the setting up partnership with Frey people. It just never ends. The Shilas go on and on and on, and the Lefnei Ivers are so difficult to unwind. And then you're going to have a problem that he's... I'm not saying it's usher because when you have a Mechleket, which is almost inevitable, you're going to be going to that place, which is a Chil Hashem. But that's what's going to happen. You're not going to go into Bezin. You'll be going to Akois, and it's not simple. It's hard to say. It can't go into partnership with a fried person. But at least you should know you have to go in with your eyes wide open. And there are significant issues, and usually, like I said, usually if there's ever an opportunity to get anything done, it's in the beginning because they're about to make a lot of money. So since they're about to make a lot of money, there's usually a certain achavas hadas, a certain goodwill. So we still like, listen here, I know you're used to working on Shabbos, even though the business is closed and takes emails. I have expectations because we're both Jews. I won't be comfortable with that. If there's ever a time to get that through, I'm not saying you'll do. I'm not saying he'll agree. But if there's ever a time where he'll agree to, we'll have a separate business phone and you shut that phone off for Shabbos, if there's ever a time you'll agree is before you start. Because once the business goes and it's not as rosy as they thought, and not because the business wasn't successful, but it's hard. Things are getting hard.
Could there be religious parameters on that contract of this partnership?
Yeah. It could be. I'm just saying, if there's ever a hope that I'll listen to, is what you should do at the beginning. And if you need to go into such a contract, it really is a landmine. It's a landmine, and it just never ends. It's landmines. It's just one after the next after the next. Where if it would be a Gentile,
easier.
It's so much easier. I know this sounds a little ethnic, but it's true. If it would be a Gentile, it would be easier. And if it would be a firm person, there wouldn't be the problem. So there is a certain challenge by having a partnership with a non-religious Jew. And sometimes people enter into such partnerships because they yerush into partnerships. It wasn't a decision they made. There's a lot of different reasons why it happens, and not because every time a person has a partnership means it's wrong, and not because you're doing the wrong thing, but it's something to keep your eyes open.
Okay. We managed to find something good about Goyim today. Okay. Very good. Isaac, just to answer your question, some clients, when they do business with a Yid, they will have the lawyers review, draft, review, negotiate contracts, and the final sign-off comes from a Dayan in Lakewood. So it happens. And the Dayan will put some magical language in the contract about the Beis Din clause, about all sorts of kinyanim, just to make sure that whatever the Dayanim do, they put that stuff in the contract. So it does happen. Clients that are conscientious will in fact do that when doing business with you.
Thank you. Good question, Tim.
Quick question based on Rabbi Kushner's point. If you have someone that is an irreligious Jew, and my mindset was always, okay, give the business to the Jewish person because he's Jewish over a non-Jewish person, would you still recommend giving the business to the non-Jewish person because you won't come into these issues of partnerships and bringing
in... When you say giving, I mean, we're not talking about a partnership. We're just talking about...
Referring business or even starting up a business.
You want to know if you should be referring business to a non-Jewish, to an irreligious Jew over a non-Jew, even though it will make issues of, let's say, Shabbos, for example?
Because it would make issues of sex.
No. You say...
Because you're going to be...
Okay, so there's two questions. First of all, is there a chiyuv? Kai chichima, he's supposed to support... you're supposed to do business with Yidden. You're supposed to support the businesses of Yidden. So question number one, is there a mitzvah to support the businesses of a non-religious Jew? Someone, when you say non-religious, we define that as someone does not keep Shabbos. He's not sharing Shabbos. This far has to. So that's question number one. Is there a chiyuv? Is that your question?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good question. And one would think there is no chiyuv. That would be the pashtus. Imach, right? Imach means he's imach, and this is lav b'chal achicha, right? And someone who's not shem shabbos, lav b'chal achicha, gets a little complicated, maybe b'tzmanenu, someone who was never exposed to from a yidin. So maybe he's a tenek shenishba, maybe not. Rav Moshe Nemzon, fry people are not tenek shenishbas unless they're really tenek shenishbas, meaning unless they've been captured by Rav Moshe Nemzon, but they were poshut that b'negei fry people. It's more lenient with ribbis because there's a Shulchan Aruch when they get charging fried people ribbis, or Moshe is more mekel because he holds a label called chicha. The pasha should be that to do business to a non-religious Jew would not be a mitzvah, but there is not, it's not so simple as it should be. It really should be. I would think it's simple. But you find b'negei halachas ani mahapich, which is also learned to chay chicha. Ani mahapich means to go and try to steal a deal. Now, there's a question, can I steal a deal from a non-religious Jew? And surprisingly enough, the poiskim are seem to be machmir. Very interesting. So it's not clear. That's A. But B, if it's negeya for an iser, which means you are chayish, you suspect that giving him this business will lead to an aveira, not only would you not have a mitzvah pasuk, you would now be entering a new problem that you'd be lefneiver. Can't give business to someone, right? The Gemara says that if you have a kusi, kusim were yidden that didn't keep the laws of chalamay. The Gemara says you're not allowed to rent a sada to a kusi because you know he's going to work at chalamay. It's with me either, right? So to give someone business when you know the derech hateva means he's going to be working on Shabbos, would very likely.
The case of the kusi is because the deal was called mine. I can give business.
No, that's one reason. And the Gemara says, why do you have to? Oh, right. Oh, that's what you're learning. Oh, very good. So, I totally forgot. Right. So, and the Gemara says, why do you have to come on to that? If I remember correctly, the Gemara says, why do you come on to Lifneiver? So, the Gemara says, Chod Vayd Kamer, just Lifneiver, right? Now, listen to this. This Kusi, he's renting the field, right? It doesn't make a difference what he does in the field. He has to pay me rent, right? And you get this all the time that, like, I have an accountant. This is nothing about you. And
I appreciate you saying that.
We have an accountant, but this is all the time. I have an accountant, and they work on Shabbos, but I don't care if they work on Shabbos. They can work on Sunday, right? And the premise of the question is, non-religious accountants working in my office, and they're working on Shabbos, and I give them a workload for the weekend, because we're running behind, and they could do it on Sunday, but they could do it on Shabbos. And the premise of the question is that I didn't tell them to do it on Shabbos, and since I didn't tell them to do it on Shabbos, there would be no problem of Lufneiver. That's the premise of the question. And there's no question about it that when the Gemara Avodah Zarah says, you rent a soda to a kusi, it means it's leased to him. He's in charge of the soda. Is there any difference to the Yid what he does in Chalamoy? Obviously not. I don't care what he does in Chalamoy, right? And the Gemara says it's also. So the pastor should be that the fact that you don't care that it doesn't have Shabbos and Sunday. I didn't say that. I'm just saying that kind of. That wasn't the question.
Just make
we
sure,
have an accountant.
Just make sure, you know, that you say you have until Monday.
No, but he's saying
that's a non-Jew. That's what he's saying.
That's my point.
But Monday.
But what about a non-religious Jew? He's saying it's a little Eva problem.
Right.
You
can't
say
it. You know, or can't
Joe wants more time to finish the project.
You need more time.
Joe wants more time to finish the project.
It's almost impossible to be able to control employees. Then you're talking about maybe then you can't have employees that were not from, you know, fried employees, and you can't have that either.
Like not running this other.
Yes, right. So Mark says so. Right. So at the end of the day, as long as the situation to where there's enough time to they'll allow them and they make the decision themselves.
Right. Once again, I'm not saying
you have to suspect that a non-religious accountant will do work on Shabbos.
No, I
but
know
the Gemara does say that there's a pattern, and the pattern of Kusim is they don't work. They do work in Chol HaMoed. It's a stated pattern, and they, you know, they'll do that. If you have an employee that says, "Listen, I'm religious. I mean, I'm not religious, but Sunday's my family day. I know there's a lot of workloads for the weekend. It's always done on Shabbos. It's a pattern. It repeats itself. There's a paper trail. Every Shabbos, the emails start coming. Done this, done this, done this, whatever it is. And you see what he's doing. So at what point does it become a kusi? At some point.
Right. Okay. So make sure the goy gives him the work.
Very good. Correct.
Actually, goy give the work this time.
That's
I'll
correct.
Give the work
That's
during
correct.
The week.
Very good.
Very good. So, Rabbi, you touched on anima pech lecharara.
Yes.
So this becomes very relevant in the business world, competition. A lot of times we think that everything is, it's a free market, laissez-faire, capitalism, everything, anything goes. But it's not really the case. There's certain methods, certain types of competition that are just not permissible. And so a lot of times we would need to ask the question about whether the type of competition we're contemplating is a valid type of competition. I had a client who was using search terms in his Google business, and he was using search terms and incorporating the search terms of his friend's competing business into his search terms so he could pull the business to him, including the name of the other person's business. I told the client, I think he has a little problem here. I don't know if he's allowed to do this. Probably should ask somebody. It's from Yid. So I don't know what the answer was ultimately to that one, but there are a lot of questions relating to competition that we do need to ask. The rabbi mentioned stealing a business deal. I mean, what is stealing a business deal? Does the guy have a contract? If the guy is just negotiating, can I negotiate too? These are all very complicated questions that we would need to ask questions to.
Something's not even so complicated.
Complicated for lay people.
I mean, no. I mean, the Gemara say whenever there's a negotiation, there's a certain point in a negotiation. It's I know this is not black and white, but that's the way it is. The world's not black and white. A person has to use a cycle, and you can't just say it's not black and white because we live in a not black and white world. But there is a point in a negotiation when it is assumed by both parties that the deal's going through, and now we are just trying to get whatever we can. Let's say it would be a real estate deal, okay? So, but a very simple, it's not complicated. A guy's buying a house from a person who lived in the house, and now he's moving on, he's going to Florida, and it doesn't work this case here. So he's moving down, and he's selling his house. And now a yid's coming, and he's buying the house, okay? So there are certain terms of this deal, which until you hit there's a meeting of the minds, there is no deal, which means like a ballpark price, right? And then there's a certain point when both sides do feel that they're going to come at this deal, and now they're discussing, I would like you to leave the chandelier fixtures. Now that's negotiation. And theoretically speaking, one of them could become a hothead and the whole deal could fall apart. Deals can fall apart from everything. But before it falls apart, it's assumed that it won't fall apart. You understand? So there are certain basic terms, right? That Chazal say, and the Pesukim discuss, that after that, we assume the deal will go through. And from the Pesukim, the Ikar Pesukim, what it seems like, that's the price. Even though there's still terms, like, is there a provision for a mortgage, right? There's still terms that are not ironed out. But when they hit a price, it is assumed the deal's going through. When that happens, someone else cannot come in, another yid cannot come in and try to take that deal. Now, Rav Moshe says that even in price, sometimes it gets to a point where it just they both ultimately are going to agree. If one of them just says, no more, I'm not negotiating, the other guy will agree. But they're back and forth. So it's like 100,000, 95, 98, and it's just like, just the chopping. Chopping, 500, right? And so at that point, Rav Moshe says, even in price negotiations, it's assumed that it'll go down. And that's also called that they hit the price, that there's a deal going to go through. As soon as you hit that threshold, which I'm agreeing, it's not black and white, but Seichel sometimes dictates that you hit that, at that point, another person can't come. And that's called Animahapech, and that's Nicarasha. That's one form of illegal competition. He mentioned there are other forms, I'm sorry, there are other forms of illegal competition where you're using someone else's investment, things that someone else did, someone else's brand, and you're misleading, and that's also a Tyson Kedushin Maram over there. And there are other forms of competition where it does. But coming and stealing someone's deal is Mufurishi Gemara Kedushin. It's Nicarosha. It's not enforceable in Besdin, but Nicarosha is not a good thing. And the Sma says that on Friday night, before the Chadai, they'd give a clap and they'd have a Rishima and they'd announce every week who were the Rishoyim of the week. And that was the punishment. And I don't know why they don't do this, because that's what they're supposed to do. You know, and today, you're going to hurt the guy's feeling, and what about his family? But guess what? In the times of the Gemara. Right, in the times of the Gemara, they also had feelings and they also had families, and that was the halacha. They announced every week who was the Rosh of the week. And if you do that often enough, there won't be any more Rishayim of the week.
What about price shopping? So let's say you don't know the other guy is...
We can make a whole other Yerchikala on this. If you like, I can discuss it. But that, I don't think that was your point. Unless you want to discuss it. But price shopping... We're trying to bring go through issue after issue and flag it.
Listen, you're coming up with... You're going to make at the end of this thing, you have a whole itinerary for the next 17 years of what we should be learning.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is going to add it to the list.
Another topic is like investing in something or being involved in business with something that is a davar iser, like renting a piece of property to a church or to another type of place that does usher things. Or someone came, they wanted to invest in a fund. The fund is a venture capital fund, and they invest in businesses that explore ways to make healthier meat. So they take stem cells from Chazer and they do all novellas, right? So there are certain things that, again, it's not so pushy that you could just say, yes, it's okay to invest.
Yeah, it's also, and basically the point is that a person has to know his business, because we can go on. You're doing a terrific job, by the way. As you make our way through.
I coached him the whole day.
No, because
Joe wrote the album.
You already got your day in Chashmish, and Tamar Chaim, and he's bringing Hachaz Yichud, we'll have Ben Ezra, and he's going through every Chelik and Shulchan Aruch. But the point is, and I kind of touched on this, if a person's in a business and there is something in the business called financing, forget about what the finance is doing, it has to raise a red flag. If there's financing going on, he's financing his purchase orders, right? He's having terms, net 210 net 30, right? And he's financing his purchase orders. Or there's business lines. And there is some form of financing. So then there's a red flag for Ribbis. And then you have his child. It's very hard to become an expert in Eidin Ashek. And Ashek is a whole parak. And there's many, many simon Shulchan Aruch. When I was in Lakewood, we learned Rabbi Blazer in the old trailers. But at least you have to know that that's a thing. And then if you're in cutthroat competition and you find yourself in a position where you're directly impacting in a negative way other Yidden's business, it very well might be mutter, but it very well might not be. And then you have to ask a shal. So everyone has to really be familiar with their business. Where does it impact? Where does it impact halach? And they have to start reading up and educating themselves. Seems like you did that already.
In terms of the stem cell tech investment, we have some familiarity with that. I know a kid that's in it right now. Am I supposed to tell him that he's invested in something that...
He's dumb as you ask a Shaila, of course.
He's already in it. He already put his money into this.
Being in it, Lav Dafka, makes a difference. Yeah, if you have an opportunity to help a kid, I would assume...
Am I helping by telling him, by the way, that's us, or you're not getting your money?
Meaning he's not going to listen to you?
No, he will listen to
so then,
very ignorant
Shemai. Of course, you should tell him.
The question is like telling someone as he's carrying a Shabbat, oh, by the way, there's no Eruv. While he's in the middle of the road. That's the question. That's the question.
Well, you just said he'll listen to you.
He's going to listen to them.
I don't know what his options are.
You just said I listen to you.
Just send it to Rabbi Blezha. Let Rabbi Blezha tell him what it is.
Usually we don't close. I don't know, Rabbi Blezha, but usually I do also speak to a lot of people business. Generally speaking, we don't close people businesses down. Usually there's a way to structure it. You know, I want to tell you a story. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, I'm assuming that most people heard of Shimshon Pinkus. So he used to give chaburis Thursday night in Bobov on Chagai over there. And The way, as is, you know, once he's nifted, then it becomes like, you know, people realize his greatness. But then it was like maybe five people. We used to go to Chaburis Thursday night, and he used to say things that, you know, you won't find on tape, and wild things were given out of there. So he was once saying a story, and he kind of, the whole story didn't make sense because you saw he was hiding something. But then I recently saw the other half of the story, so now I'm in possession of the full story, and I'm going to tell it to you. And if you know Reb Shimshon Pinkus, he had zero chashivas for money. He had no covet for money. He had no respect for money in a very, very strange way. Like most people, money does have certain functions in life, no matter how holy you are. Very little respect for money. And there was a story as follows. He was a Rav in Ofakim, and there was a bacher that got engaged, and he was involved in a motor vehicle accident, and it was not his fault. He was not at fault, and he sustained some damage to his back. And Baruch Hashem, he was going to be okay, but at this point, he was slightly injured. I shouldn't say slightly, injured, he was injured. And he had a lawyer, and he was suing the insurance, which generally people, you're allowed to sue the insurance. Okay, he was suing the insurance. So he was suing the insurance, and his lawyer came to him with the following hamtzah, the following idea. He said that we're going to go in front of the judge, you're 100%, he's 100% at fault, but the reward is going to be proportioned to the injury. If you're 100% fine and he was at fault, then everyone moves on, right? So the lawyer said, right now you're not 100% fine, and you're getting married in a month. Orthodox Jews generally do not push off their wedding date. It's not something that people do. So if you would push off the wedding date, it would make a roshim, it would be something that the impress the judge. And the judge would see this is not something that's a minor little nothing, and broke a toenail. This is something that's very serious. The guy pushed off his wedding. Obviously, he doesn't feel comfortable walking down the chuppah. And if you do that, there's a nice payday for you. This was the idea. So this chassan thought that was a wonderful idea. So he told his kallah, and his kallah said, sounds like a decent idea, but you really should ask a roof. So they went to Reb Shimshon Pinkus, which is the last guy to answer. And they went to Reb Shimshon, and he could not fathom the question. He could not fathom. I was explaining to them what a wedding day is. It's a shah toiv mitzlacha. There's a certain shah, and you're mechavim to the shah. All the bracha comes from that shah, and now you're moving it. And you're moving it for gelt. Ich. And he couldn't fathom the shah. And guess what the chassan said? Mechatesi. I'm going to move it because, you know, I don't have a lot of money. And my father has a lot of money. I'll be able to learn. I do want to move the Shah. So he said, I'm going to take it to Reb Shach. So he said, fine, take it to Reb Shach. So they went to Reb Shach. And at this point, Reb Shimshon was saying over the story, he kind of didn't say the rest of the story, but in the book, they have the rest of the story. So they go to Reb Shach, and this chassan says over the whole story. And Reb Shach says to Reb Shimshon, and what's up there? And he says, you heard him. This guy's out of his mind. He's trying to move a chasna because he's trying to impress the lawyer, impress the thing. He's moving his chasna day. For guilt coming to a cheshma of moving a chasna. Have you heard the shtus in my life? So, Shach says, yeah. Chvesnish. And Reb Shimshon is just aghast. Chvesnish. 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 So that's it. So the chassan has like a, you know, he's in a pretty good place right now. You know, he's feeling pretty good about things. So that's it. What are you going to do? Reb Shach is not known for being indecisive, but he became indecisive on this shiloh. So they leave. And then he says, is that the chassan? He calls him back. And Reb Shimshon is out of the room. And Abshach looked at me and said, is that meshuggah? You're pushing off a wedding date for money? And now the chassan's not in a great place anymore because his like chassi ally is basically turning on him. And he says, you just told me chves nisht. And he says, Hezekhan, Reb Shimshon, Verzayn from the Gedolei Hador, Abbe Ahonish can cover it for geld. He doesn't have any respect for money. I'm sorry. He's here again. I'll tell you over after.
You're sitting with two signs.
He doesn't have any respect for money.
I kicked him.
And this is what he said. He said, Shach said, Reb Shimshon thinks. Universal language. Yeah. He said, so Shimshon, by Shimshon, geld is garnished. It's nothing. But be'etzem, in truth, geld is epis, geld is something. Geld is mitzvahs, geld is limud haTorah, geld is schar limud, you know, that you pay tuition with geld. He said, geld is shalom bayis, right? And he starts, money, from money, there's avodas Hashem that comes from money, because a house that has money, you could pay for the yeshivas, and you could hire rebbeim, and you could pay for mitzvahs. And sometimes a house that doesn't have money becomes a certain level of dysfunction. That money would, now I'm not saying money brings happiness, but sometimes not having money will lead to its own problems. And he said, there's a certain necessity of geld in Yiddishkeit. And Reb Shimshon versteht nicht. He said, Reb Shimshon doesn't see that. And he said, I'm trying to mechanech him that when a shayla comes with money, he has to look at it like something. You know, there's a shayla. Now it happens to be, this is a shtus. And that's the way, and as you know, I want you to know, come on, any Rav or Dayan that's involved in business, there was a point at the end of this, any Rav or Dayan involved in business, they understand that, and I think they should. You can't just, okay, your business has a problem, I recommend you shut it down. You can't do that, because I'm not saying you can't, meaning you can break halacha, but you have to work with the business, and usually there are ways to structure it, you know? And there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, it's a weird thing to say, but this is one of my favorite l'shoynes of Shulchan Aruch, and maybe it's other places, but this is the only place I found it. There's a halacha in Eben Ezra, in Simchav Beis, by Yichud, where there's a person, we're not getting involved in the whole thing, but there's a person that has a business, Osk Iskovim Noshim, which means he has a business that deals with women, and because of that, there's a chashash, Yichud, and all the heterim fall off. Because since the women need him, let's say he's selling them shaitels. Since this is the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, I'm just bringing it up in my opinion. This is what it says. That since the women need him, so they'll cover for him. It's lead by gaspa. And even though usually the woman's husband's in the city, that would be a shmira. You lose the shmira. It becomes a tremendous yichud problem. So the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is as follows. So keitzad yaseh, what do? Right? Keitzad yaseh, yifana l'malacha acheres, get a new job. That's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, right? So then you meet like a lawyer, and he says, what do you mean? I don't go to Akkoyis. It's my parnasa. There's something in Shulchan Aruch called Yifane Lemalacha Acheres. If you have no Eitzah, your wife can't come to work with you, get a new job. It's such a Matthias. Not every, because I have a parnasa, that means all Rabbanim have to stop what they're doing, right? And cater to. But usually, there's a balance. Usually, there is a way to structure it. But ultimately, just because it's your parnasa doesn't mean that's matter, because it's your parnasa. But being that it is a parnasa, that's very important, it is usually a way to structure in a proper way. I'm sorry, I'm talking to you. I apologize. No, okay. Went over time.
I think they'll grab this last point that was mentioned, just the Nevelos of Traces. I think that people don't realize, people know maybe that Basa B'chalof, you know, that's also Ba'ana. Yeah, Inesach, you had a story before, you know, it's also Ba'ana, something that you can't benefit from at all. That's, you know, right. People are aware of that. But if it's not kosher, so, yeah. You know, okay, it's not kosher cooking. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's not matzah.
They don't know that you can't
people
own.
They don't know that the severe, the real shayla we even the raisa, more than
the raisa, yeah.
of doing business with non-kosher food.
It's a
scary. And that affects hospitals, nursing homes, obviously, and a lot of other areas. And, so,
No, you can't buy and sell non-kosher. Non-kosher, biblically non-kosher food.
I had a story, I'm not on the panel, but the story came
I'll
up
switch
two
you.
Weeks ago.
Make an exception.
2 weeks ago, I'm still in the middle of it, that someone comes in and he's buying a gas station. So he says to me, you know, can you structure Shabbos for me? Because I can't close this gas station on Shabbos. He said, okay, what else do you have in there? Gas station. How do you make money? Gas stations don't make money. So he said, no, but I have a gas station, a car wash, and La Tienda, the store over there. So we sell in the store Gatorade and hot dogs and turkey sandwiches. So he said, I said, you know, the issue here is not just Shabbos. The issue is, he said, no, there's no Basa B'chol. I made sure. There's no Basa B'chol here. So he knew Shabbos and he knew Basa B'chol. But he didn't know that, you know, the same guy that's going to own Shabbos is going to have to own the, whatever you're going to structure, is going to have to own all the trade food as well. So that's a common misconception people aren't aware of. I think it was add to what you were saying.
So regarding investments, so let's say, you know, you give a bunch of money to some like investment fund, then they invest that money in, like, you know, a bunch of random stocks and whatnot. Think when you go through every single stock that they invest in, make sure it's not in something like this year.
I mean, that was the same question you asked about the meeting.
Yeah.
He said there was a known fund that did a specific thing.
It's a legitimate question. It's not clear. It's a svara to say you have a money manager, not a Surya Hana. If you have a money manager and you're not making decisions on where he puts the money, the Isid Loshna Rambam, Loshna Shulchan Aruch, it's a similar Loshna Shabbos. Isid to be Kveya Malachta for Isser. It's not called Ibn Kireya if you have someone doing it for you, but that's only for Nevelas Travis, not for Isra. No, so it's not going to help you for comments and maybe wine, but it will help for Nevelas Travis if you have no involvement, cloud or cloud.
What if it's not from mutual fund manager?
It's a separate shot.
Isn't
he
a fund manager? He's like, he himself.
Oh,
so it's also
a separate shy lift. Then you have to go through Lifneivers, and then there's a whole bunch of different variables. If the guy can get the money without you, then it's Chachayev Denora. If he's fried, then there's no Isser. It's Messiah, then there's a whole other checklist. Every shy lift has to go through its own list.
That would be the point. The point would be to ask these questions
right.
Before taking the deep dive.
So back to Eliezer's question in terms of referral, you would have to ask a Shaila to refer somebody to a bank to get a loan or a finance agreement if they're to be considered a ribis, because hey, you have a relationship with a bank. They're going to be, this guy may not be from, or they might not be from, and now he might be getting a loan from a Jewish-owned bank.
Might not, wouldn't be an issue. Generally speaking, there is a rive of rive human beings on this planet who are not Jewish.
No,
so
you know the bank's owned by a Jew.
He just said might not.
No, I know that bank's owned by a Jew. A known Jewish bank.
Yeah. If you know it's an irreligious bank and they're not using it at the Iska, then there'll be a legitimate problem with the Fneva. Yeah. Okay.
Like owning stock in Berger.
Oh. Stockenberg, stock is something else. I believe what we were talking about until now was someone who was making an investment as an equity investment. And he was taking a sizable equity where he was a legitimate owner of the company. Now, buying stocks.
So there's a materiality threshold we're talking about?
Yeah, there is. But public stocks, when you're just putting money and you are not on their radar, and not on the company's radar, then it's a whole different Shiloh. Is that considered legitimate ownership or not? And that wasn't what he was discussing. He was discussing private equity companies are coming in. And they're putting a sizable amount of money, but even though it doesn't give them control, it gives them an opinion, say.
It could give them a seat on the board.
A seat on the board is not control, but it's say. They have say. And then at that point, they are legitimate investors in this company.
But if I'm investing in the VC fund, so I'm not going to see the board.
Right. It sounds like there's a materiality threshold over here.
The fund manager is a material threshold, but not the investor in the VC fund.
It depends.
It would depend, though.
It would depend on what rights you have as an investor.
Right.
If you have certain rights of control, then you have more of a shiloh to ask.
Right, but the typical example
right.
where you have no control at all.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Then it sounds like it's.
Then there's
okay.
It's still
it sounds
a shiloh.
Like that's a 5-minute question
right.
versus a 50-minute question.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true.
Good. Some comments that we're just talking and you have brought about. That sometimes you get involved in the partnership, you inherit the partnership, right? So that actually was my case. I inherited a partnership, right? Because I started working for somebody who was a partner. I started working for a partnership, and eventually you work way up, you become part of the partnership. Okay, so those things come up. So I would tell you that obviously those things come up, it gets really complicated because then you come in, then you're part of a partnership that's been existing, and you try to see and what. I just said the whole thing about unwinding and winding. It becomes complicated. So those are things that become complicated. But just certain things to think about I was just trying to think about that as it works for an owner, if you own a business. And let's assume if someone doesn't pay on time, you send them a bill, whatever it is, and they don't pay on time, there's a service charge. Okay, is that going to be problematic, right? Now, that'd be considered rivets, right? There's a service charge there. Okay, something to think about. Let's assume someone doesn't pay, and the normal process is if someone doesn't pay, you give it to the collection attorney. Okay, and the normal process, they do this, then they go to court, right? That's kind of typically how it works. Is that problem? It's problematic. You have to say, you know what? This one I can't give it to the collection attorney. This one, let me try a deal. We'll go to the Beis Din directly for it. So these are things that obviously they come up, and we just need to think about. We need to know that hey, there must be something over here. We need to talk about it.
A lot of times, those when you're trying to collect on something, the underlying document says that there's a late fee and there's interest accruing. That's rivets.
You can't sign it. even without doing it, you can't sign such a thing.
Right.
If it's not written right, because then there'll be a isik tzitza,
right,
which would be also even if you don't actually do it.
Usually we ask. If two non from Yidden come and have a question, they want to do paper some sort of a loan arrangement or whatever it is, I usually ask the question, can I be involved in this? I tend not to want to be involved in those types of things. It's too messy for me.
People don't realize that even if you're not lending,
right.
A lot of these terms, Arkois is one example, with the Ramaz Mufurish and Simon Chavav, that the Isser Arkois is not just a litigator. It's not just a person who's having, Arkois means to go to Gentile courts. It's not just the person that's in this dispute. The person who's been machzik him, the person who's helping him, the attorney, the litigator, also has a problem. He can't be. He's helping this litigation akois. Besides, maybe
the attorney who drafted.
Attorney who drafted. And right, and benegei ribis.
Witnesses.
There's one of these surim of lending the ribis is you can't prepare such documents. And sometimes people are not Mason Leva on this. You could have a low level. You could have a paralegal in an office. Nothing to do with this. Literally, she's working, she's getting paid her salary, and we had in Lakewood many times, we had from people working in Frye offices in Manhattan, and ultimately there was a shiloh that came, and they were literally drafting documents for Ribis. There was no Hata Iska. They were involved in the Gevina, like the Knoshe, they were calling up this other not religious, and it was time to pay. And these halachas, even though you're not the lender and you're not the borrower, the iser ribis is expansive and it includes the cipher, the guy, the collector, and certain things that people are not aware of.
We have a case now where two firm lawyers drafted the documents that provide for mamash ribis. The whole transaction's premised, part of the transaction is premised on a lending component that has ribis in it. Two firm lawyers, two firm clients. So, I mean, it happens.
Again, it goes back to the expectation that the most likely is these firm lawyer, the clients, the people, they rely on the attorneys, right? They rely on attorneys to do it the right way. And their expectation is, as a firm attorney, must already know exactly what needs to get done and how to do it the right way, and then don't even ask the question.
The same agreements are governed by secular law, requiring venue for any disputes in a secular court. The list goes on and on. The whole transaction is just, you know, fraught with halachic problems. It's drafted by two firm lawyers. So, issues.
And Peter, this is a question I saw that there's a little bit of vagueness on for startups. If usually when you want to set up things and you're starting, you have two or three employees and you want to set up contracts, is there anything to have while you're setting up your business that can help look at for the future that can help not have any issues that you haven't been able to foresee it because you're just new? We know that this is a...
In what sense? Like, there won't be machlekes?
Not machlekes, but...
I don't think that happens.
No, you're looking for partnerships and they protect you to make sure...
If there's such a document, I haven't found it. That just protects you forever.
I found that. There's not really a clear answer to that.
But normally what you're doing is if you're starting up something, you go to a lawyer, you go to someone to draft some documents. At the same time, the person you go on to draft something, again, if you're starting up and you're going to, let's say, replicate the document, and right, you can use it again, go to the dyan at the same time. Right, go to the professional, go to the dyan and sit there and make sure there's any issues that you have. And if you're really doing startup anyways, you probably just want to make sure you sat down with the dyan to go through what the plan is. Because like any business, there may be something as part of what you're looking to do that you just want to make sure it's not problematic. You may not have thought about.
Yeah.
And if you do have that conversation, then things might come up.
Just an etza that you work on a certain deal and you're looking to hire the attorney, you ask the attorney, would you be willing, as part of working my transaction, to work with this basin, whatever basin that is? And if the attorney's willing to do that, that's fine. If they're not, then you have to shop with someone else. You talk to them, I guess. Depending, you know, you really do have to get a basin involved in the beginning. You got to make sure your attorney is going to work and be receptive of working with the basin.
One more thing. I just want to say one more thing. We discussed a lot of halachas on a mahapich, and I mean, just discuss a lot of flags on a mahapich and ribbis and Shabbos, and what else did we cover? A little yichud,
yes,
veils and treifas, a little yichud.
Competition.
I just want to say one thing, b'negeir, because I found this very surprising. How does a person know, just ben adam l'chaveira, if there's a chash, what he's doing, he's not being honest, dishonest, right? Now, it's very difficult to know what's right and what's wrong because people are not. Chesh Mishpat is very complicated. Very complicated halacha. It's the master Chesh Mishpat. It's very, very difficult. It's very technical. It's very difficult. But so then it comes the question of, okay, so what are the flags? What are the flags that you know maybe what I'm doing is wrong? And this is just in my experience, flags that I've been able to see almost every one of these cases has the following scenario. I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's a flag. If you're doing business with someone and there's something happening that you do not feel comfortable disclosing to this person. And this happens in hundreds of different ways. I'm just going to give an example, but whenever it happens, almost always is a problem. And the people themselves, they have 18 reasons why they're not disclosing it. But if you have Lamarshall, you know, in Lakewood, people, Baruch Hashem, are building houses. And they're being Isaac and Ruchnis, and they don't want to have the head in Gashmis. So they hire a decorator. No, I mean, I'm really serious about this. There's a truth to that, because your head could be mama sitting there in the rugs, and maybe don't do it, but if you are doing it, I recommend you hire a decorator. So they hire a decorator.
It's a Shalom Bayim recommendation?
Yeah, 100% that also. But if you want to be holding and learning and building a house, hire a decorator. Outsource that whole Nairish guy. Now, you hire this decorator. Now, this decorator is hooked up. Now, this decorator is being paid. And they're being paid to be miyaya to you. Okay? This decorator is hooked up with that couch store and that rug store and that paint store. And they're getting a kickback, which means they're bringing the client and they're getting a certain money back for bringing that client. And they don't disclose that. They almost never do. Now, if this decorator was not being paid, this decorator would probably be over under the eyes of a miyayitz etz sheina hegenes, because they're saying, I'm going to be miyayitz you, I'm going to tell you which couch would be for you, but they're not being miyayitz you. They're going there because they're getting a kickback. If they're being paid, they're being miyayitz etz sheina hegenes, which is lifnei iver.
What's that mean?
Miyayitz etz sheina means you're giving bad advice. It's a deraisa, you're giving miyayitz etz sheina hegenes. They're giving bad advice in the sense, not that they're giving you a bad couch, but they're presenting themselves that I will curate from the different stores and give you the right furniture. They're presenting that I'm going to work for you to get the right furniture. Let's say it's for free. I'm going to do this for you. And really, all they're doing is they're trying to get themselves a kickback. If it's being paid, Pashas is Gneva. Because they're getting paid to give you good advice, and they're not. Now, if you tell them this, they'll say, no, I'm working really for the best, and I've told this to people, and I've discussed it with people, I'm working for the best interests of the client. It happens to be, I think that's the best couch, and it happens to be I worked at a deal. I say, fine. So then disclose it, and they'll never do. I can't. And when that happens, disclose it meaning say, I want you to know this is where I'm going to take you for the couch, but they're giving me a kickback. The guy would look and say, Sei gesund? I'm going to call, because you are compromised. You have a conflict of interest, right? Now, there's nothing wrong with having a conflict of interest if you disclose it, right? Someone calls me for an idea, for an etza, and I'm right now under the influence of alcohol, right? And I say, by the way, I'm under the influence of alcohol, but this is what I think. Nothing wrong with that, because you were full disclosure. But if you don't say you're under the influence of alcohol, and you say, this is what I hold, this is what you should do, then you're probably behind it. And again, it's because you're compromised. And anytime a person has his own financial interest involved, and he will not disclose it, by definition, that should be a flag. And it happens, you have all the, I could just go through different industries because it comes up all the time. You have, let's say, real estate managers, so they're managing people's buildings,
and they're managing people's money. They're spending someone's money. There's an account from the building, and they're picking which landscaper to use, and they're getting kickbacks. And they don't feel comfortable telling the owner of the building they're getting kickbacks. You know why? Because the owner of the building said, that's my money. It's my building. And he might be right. It might be wrong. I'm not discussing that. But he will say, it's my money. It's my building. I'm paying the bill on that landscaper. If he's giving you tickets to that sporting event, it's mine. That's what the owner of the building is going to say. So you know what the landscaper does? He doesn't want machlekes. He just doesn't tell him. He takes the thing for himself, right? And whenever that happens, that is a red flag that you're doing something dishonest. And then you have people that are paying the bill with their credit card, but they don't tell the owner of the building that when they put the utilities on the credit card, the utilities charge them 2%. What's in his business? So they're getting the points. They're getting the points because they're putting on the credit card, right? And then the guy, they're taking it and they're paying the credit card from the general account of the building. It's costing more money to the balabais. They're getting a type of scenario, they're getting points. And I say, you think the guy would be okay with this? And you say, yeah. So why don't you tell him? Nah, I can't tell him. And the reason why you can't tell him is because he won't be okay. And you know he won't be okay. So anytime you find yourself in an interpersonal monetary situation, and you are not telling him, and you're not telling him because you forgot to tell him, you're not telling him because you just will not tell him, it usually means there is an issue that you might be not dealing honestly. And a lot of times it's straight up geneva. And these are examples because I was asked to speak somewhere in Staten Island about business ethics. And when you go through the circuit of Chashmish, it's not so many business ethics, it's geneva, it's mutter. There is something called business ethics. It's chshad, ahalochis of chshad. I'm not saying there's no such thing. So I called people and I said, do you have any business ethic challenges? And the answer is absolutely not, never. And then these cases start going, I'm like, I want you to know, you do not have business ethics. You are a ganef. And almost every case, and all you need to do is ask them, are there things you're not telling people you're working with? And a lot of them are pushing to geneva. I'm straight up geneva. So that is something I can react to if you are dealing with people and you are withholding information, bidafka, then usually that is a red flag. Oh my gosh, this usually gets a big response. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there term limits when there is a being involved in a monetary matter? Is there a term limit before you take it to the next step? Let's say the bank said, no, you owe this guy this money, and then the guy said, no, I'm not gonna pay.
Well, usually if you go to Bezdin and Bezdin says, usually you sign an arbitration agreement, and then Bezdin can use that to be enforced in secular law just as an enforcement arm. So even though Bezdin a lot of times has very limited power, sometimes more, sometimes less, but generally they don't have too much power to enforce it, but the arbitration agreement is enforceable in court.
So there's a time
unless it's illegal, unless something happened illegal. I'm sorry?
Is there a term limit to take to the next level?
No,
let's say the inside arbitration.
They won't. Bezdin won't ever take you in without signing right. Arbitration.
So tomorrow there's another question and answer session.
Oh.
With Hashem, so let's just have some closing remarks. And then.
So one thing about the arbitration, people think there's this notion in the business world that the Bezdin is a chas v'shalom, but like a Mickey Mouse type of adjudication. That's really not the case. I've been involved in a few, more than I'd like to be involved in Bezdin proceedings, but you do get very good quality justice in Bezdin, and you get it at a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the time. So for business people to consent to this type of thing, putting aside that it's halachically required, it's also actually much better than what you would get if you decided to go into a secular court.
Which is why it's halachically required.
Good. And as a lawyer who practices in secular courts, I have the right to tell you that it's better to go to Bezdin than to go to secular courts. It's faster, it's cheaper, and it's more effective, and you get better adjudication. So, I don't know if you have any closing remarks, but...
I just gave my closing remarks.
Yeah. I think, just coming back to what we talked about from the very beginning, is it's clearly very complicated. There's a lot of different situations that arise. And it's not always limited to, per se, our businesses. Again, as advisors, that now extends as having conversations with people. Achrayus, if we know someone that's doing something who shouldn't be doing, do they know, do they not know? It gets very complicated. It gets very complicated how to deal with a lot of these circumstances. And even with ourselves and how in our own life and what we're doing, it's most of these actions really have to be asked. And I think it just goes back to we have to be educated enough to know what that. You're not going to know the answer because there's so many nuances like anything else. Right? There's enough nuances that's how you have accountants who stay in business. Tax stuff. There's always a different nuance, right? But there's enough nuances to make out that you have to at least to know if there's a question to ask and have someone to ask it.
And I think
that's
it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Now, one moment. So,